He is our good buddy, the one and only Daniel Helm. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. How are you?
We are lovely, and hopefully this sunshine is here to stay as we get closer and closer to the beginning of baseball season. And I want to begin by asking you what in the world happened in the South region. I mean, you take a look at what's left in the South. You have a 9 seed in Kansas State, a 5 seed in Kentucky. No matter how powerful and how legendary that Kentucky basketball program may be, they're a 5 seed, and they are the top seed remaining in that bracket. What in the world happened in the South?
I mean, goodness gracious, absolute chaos. And, you know, here we go. 10 days ago, John Calipari's complaining about, oh, we always get a poor draw. Kentucky always gets a poor draw. Now they look like they have a cakewalk, but maybe even the championship game. You know, oh, I really feel bad for Calipari now. But, I mean, we talked about it last week. The three-pointer is the great equalizer. We talked about that kid's injury from Virginia, and the stars aligned. 16-1, and not only did they beat them, I mean, they hammered them. They looked like they were the better team. If you didn't look at the names on the front of those jerseys, you would have thought UMBC was supposed to win that game. I was standing up in my living room. My parents, my in-laws were visiting. My father-in-law said, all right, I think it's time to call it. It's about 10:30. And then UMBC hits a couple threes to start the half, and it's like, all right, we got to get comfortable because I think we're going to see history here.
Crazy stuff. I mean, and that was far and away the biggest upset of the weekend, but there were plenty of others, you know, just taking a look at the lower seeds that advanced. I want to take a look at a team right now, though, that is one of the top seeds remaining, although they may not be as powerful now as they were a week ago. Boy, Purdue was a very intriguing team throughout the course of the year, but now their 7'2" center, Isaac Haas, they have deemed out for the remainder of the NCAA tournament. He was injured in their first game last weekend. He tried to play in warmups in the second game, but he got to the free throw line, had a very difficult time getting his shot off, and that was pretty much the end of that. Without him, Dan, do they have any chance?
I think they do. Now, he averaged incredible numbers, but this is where, you know, having senior leadership on a good team, they're battle-tested. They won a ton of games this year in the Big Ten, and they have an inside-out combo still, and actually both their last names are Edwards. One's a guard, one's a power forward, and they can still get the ball inside. The other thing is they have a freshman who is also 7'1". And if you saw him standing next to Haas, they look like they could be twin brothers. He's just a little bit thin. He had a great game. I think he had 7 points, 9 rebounds against Butler. He had a double-double earlier in the season. He's had to play up to 25 minutes in a game when Haas has been in foul trouble. He is a freshman, but he proved the other day that he can do, and he doesn't have to overcompensate or anything. He just needs to be a force in the middle. And this team still has the firepower to go, and especially with the way the tournament's going. It is a big loss, and I've read that they've been trying to fit him with the right brace and everything, but even if Haas goes out there for 5 minutes, I don't think he's going to get much. And as physical as a game basketball can be, I don't think he can take the pain that it would come with it. But I still like Purdue a lot. That region to me is still unbelievable. Villanova WVU is going to be a great game tomorrow night also.
Boy, in that game, holy cow. I mean, they ended up playing in the second round against Marshall, and that was a matchup that, well, you and I living down in Charleston, we saw a couple of times at the Charleston Civic Center. I was not expecting to see that matchup, but then again, there were a lot of other matchups that we ended up seeing simply because there were so many upsets. You know, look at some of these seeds that remain. Dan, we've got 2 11 seeds still alive in the Sweet 16. You got a couple of 9 seeds still surviving as well. Who would you say is the most impressive of the lowest seeds that remain?
Well, there's two that stand out to me, and the funny thing is they both play each other tonight. And it's not name recognition, but Loyola versus Nevada is going to be incredible because if you look what those two teams did in the span of 4 days, Loyola beat an ACC team and an SEC team on buzzer beaters, 2 buzzer beaters in a row. They just played their game solid. They got down and up in both games, and they just stayed in control, and they hit the shot at the end of the game. Two in a row against big-time programs. Excuse me. And then you look at Nevada, who they play. Nevada beat Texas and Cincinnati after trailing Texas by 15 and trailing Cincinnati by 22. In the second half, you're looking at overcoming major double-digit deficits to come back and win games. And just, you know, the way that those two teams have gotten there is incredible. You know, Syracuse is an 11. They were the last team in the tournament, but they've always had the firepower. You know, they had a little bit of a lull in the conference season. And now you're looking at their zone is going to be difficult to match up against. Their bad luck is they're running in against the team, Duke, who has played against that style many times over the last couple of years.
Well, that's, I think when we talked last week, we talked about how that Midwest region was going to be so interesting because you had teams like Kansas, Michigan State, Duke. Michigan State, of course, ousted by Syracuse in a game where Michigan State couldn't hit a shot to save their lives down the stretch. But that's still a very intriguing bracket because as far as the seeding goes, I think the top seeds, most of the top seeds anyway, still remain in the East. But if you look at that Midwest, while Michigan State was knocked off, there's a lot of firepower with those four teams that still remain in Kansas, Clemson, Syracuse, and Duke. Those are four programs with some serious history.
They really are. And just my daughter, Chloe, has picked Kansas to win it all, and she's currently winning every bracket pool she's in, which makes complete sense because she's the expert, apparently. But what you say, you know, Kansas has always been there right on the cusp. Bill Self has won a title. You know, that name. Every year you feel like they're in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight trying to play. And you look what Clemson did. That's an underrated game. I think it was a late game on Sunday where people weren't really paying attention. They beat Auburn. At one point, they were up by 40 points. They were up 40 points on the SEC champion. That is incredible. So they're really going to test Kansas tomorrow night. And then that battle of, you know, I know not a lot of favorable coaches in this matchup, but Syracuse versus Duke. Lots of history, a lot of national championships and Final Fours in the last 10 or 15 years. And Syracuse has that zone. And they made Michigan State look like a team that didn't know what they were doing. And everybody that's watched Michigan State this year knows how good of a team that is. So they could do that easily to Duke tomorrow night. I do see Duke just having too much firepower for them.
This hasn't exactly been a good year in this tournament for the top seeds. So of the two number one seeds that remain between Kansas and Villanova, which do you think is most likely to go down over the course of this weekend?
Well, that's a tough question because I think probably Kansas because they're going to have to play a tough Clemson team and then probably Duke. And that's a back-to-back matchups against two really good teams. I feel like Villanova, the winner of Villanova-WVU, which may be a 100-point game, we'll get to the Final Four. I think Texas Tech is just not quite battle-tested, and I think Purdue, being the man down, is not going to quite have the firepower to beat either of those teams. So I think Villanova is going to get into the Final Four, and then I think KU has the hardest road for the one seeds. But as we saw last weekend, I mean, we could be talking about no number one seeds remaining 24 hours from now.
Dan, I think it was you who mentioned either last week or the week before about the seniors and the one-and-dones and how some of these smaller schools are going to get their moments in the sun because you just have that basketball IQ from some of these older guys that the young athletic guys, the one-and-doners, don't quite have at this point. How much of this crazy tournament do you see as being attributed to that? Is that kind of what's happening here?
Yeah, I think so. And here's the other thing that we didn't really talk a lot about is the transfers. And, you know, Tubby Smith talked about it last week, that transfers are up across the board. There's almost 1,000 kids that transfer every year. Now, Nevada is made up of a pair of twins that played at NC State for 2 years. They're ACC battle-tested. They transfer, sit out a year. They practice together with another transfer at Nevada because they had a coaching change. You look at the guy that scored almost 30 against Virginia. He's a Virginia Commonwealth transfer. He's had tournament experience before. But you get these guys practicing and playing together for 2 or 3 years, and it speaks wonders of what they can do because you get some of these one-and-done teams. You look at Arizona. They had as much talent as anybody, but they had three guys that had been together for 7 or 8 months. Now, that seems like a long time of playing together, but, you know, we talk about it with the Cavs, having new players and everything, and you just see it takes time to develop. And 3 years together is a lot better than, you know, one or two. And that teamwork really surpasses talent.
Dan Helm is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And while we have spoken a lot about the NCAA tournament, partner, I want to throw something your direction. And I only ask you this because of all the experience that you've got in minor league baseball and in minor league sports. This is a topic that has certainly picked up some steam, not only over the last 24 hours as more stories have begun to circulate about minor league baseball players perhaps losing their minimum wage rights under this spending bill. You know, there was an article in Forbes earlier today talking about that provision that's listed as Save America's Pastime Act, and it's going to be an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938, which dictates what minor league baseball players will make. Now, you and I, of course, we know some of these guys. We've worked with some of these guys on a smaller scale. We worked with some of these guys, and in your time as the general manager with the Lake Erie Crushers, you have an idea as to how this works. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that particular provision, whether you think it's fair or not, or if it's justifiable or not, just your general thoughts on that.
Well, it's tough, too, because those guys are making not a lot of money. You know, there's a couple big guys, and the names we always read about have these big signing bonuses, and you forget about, you know, you still need 22 other guys on the roster besides the three, you know, big-time players. And, I mean, we're talking about justifying, you know, or adjusting something from 1938. You think it's probably time for us to take a look at it? And it's a very unique situation because minor league sports is not like working the drive-through or working at Target or, you know, having a salary job in business. And especially because it could be considered seasonal or part-time because you're probably putting in about 6 months a year. It's really tough, but I understand where the players are coming from. But I also understand that they're trying to reach a goal. And here's something that a lot of people don't realize. All the minor league players are being paid by the parent club. So any team in the Indians organization, like the Arrows or the Scrappers or the Captains, the Cleveland Indians pay the salaries of those players, not the minor league affiliate. So that's where a lot of this is coming from, and a lot of everybody knows how much money there is and the TV money that comes up. And I think those players want the trickle-down effect.
Yeah, no question about that. And look, who can blame them? I mean, I think if you take a look at the kind of money that's being discussed with these major league teams, that whole major league pie is somewhere in the area of $10 billion. And I think that's why you hear a lot of those minor league guys saying they wish they'd spread the wealth just a little bit. Dan, a pleasure as always, my man. I know I threw you a bit of a wild card there at the very end, but given all your experience in that business, I was just kind of curious as to what you thought about that. I don't think we've heard the end of that story. That's something that's certainly going to pick up steam here in the coming weeks as well, especially as we approach the beginning of the year. We always appreciate the time talking NCAA college hoops, and we'll do it again next week.
Yes, sir. My pleasure, gentlemen. Always a good time. Thanks so much.